If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Tonight I have a topic that's going to be dear to all of your little star-seeded souls, and the topic is my awakening as a Venusian now on Earth. Hello. Yep, I'm going to tell you a bit of my story and how I experienced awakening and finding out who I was. As a star-seeded being. So tonight is about lifting the veil for those of you whose time has come to have that veil lifted. And many of you are right at that point now when the command would like you to remember, without having it break your heart. You know, it's hard for me to talk about these topics myself because I began to long so much for my home that I don't function really well here in the physical. And I don't want to do that to you. With the recall, there's a sort of homesickness that I've experienced that I don't want you to have to go through if you don't have to. I would like you to be happy about your life and excited about being here on Earth and experiencing what Earth has to offer. And it has a lot to offer. It's so different from our home planets that we can learn and master things here that we can't on any other orb throughout the cosmos, I'm given to understand. So your Earth life is really, really important. And the only way to get out of here is to get down here fully. We have to integrate fully into the Earth body, occupy it, and master its levels. That's the whole gig here, is to become a conscious, divine co-worker. We're co-partnering with the Supreme Godhead in the administrating and creating and advancing of multiple worlds with their attendant levels of awareness. Each planet, each star, and a considerable number of moons have life at some level. And each is a school of consciousness, each one unique. Our Earth planet is a school where we're under the energy that we call intelligent activity with an agenda to learn love wisdom. So we need to learn how to intelligently navigate ourselves, directing consciously our feelings and our thoughts so that we can produce love and wisdom through intelligent activity. That's the whole nine yards here on planet Earth. And when you do that, in loving goodwill all the time, you get to leave this place and never have to come back. And so that's the whole process. And because we're in the graduation period, many, many souls have come in for a variety of reasons. One might be to finish unfinished self-mastery tasks. These will be the things that are in your face consistently over and over again that you're here to master, not to avoid, not to escape, but to have a hands-on experience of mastering them. The best way we can master anything is to allow it to be what it is and to do what it does and be present with it without resistance. Whatever you resist, you form a energetic that keeps the thing attached to you. So it's best to just, you know, as the saying goes, let go and let God flow. Learn to flow and embrace of and allow and flow through experiences without letting them snag and get into you and fester. Let things be free in you. Let people and relationships have freedom with you and in you. Because that is how you set yourself free. And so this attitude of allowing is, I think, a major key to moving without creating more entrapment here. We learn to kind of live above the dramas of life. We kind of overview them in a very detached way, which I've spoken about in a number of shows. I think you're getting my drift by now. So let's take a little bit of a meditational mosey here to attune to this frequency. I'm going to bring you up into the vibrations of Venus tonight, which will be 4th, 5th, 6th density. And some of you may be able to go up into the 7th and 8th. Whatever. Just be with your process. And stay conscious if you want to hear what I'm saying. You might want to keep your eyes open. I can't close my eyes because if I do, I'm gone in a nanosecond. So some of us meditate better with our eyes open. This process tonight is to lift the veil, decode, and activate more of your celestial inner awareness. The Maserati consciousness, if you will, the Lamborghini consciousness that you had on Venus, you had to dim down and dumb down considerably to function here on Earth. And you had to have a certain amount of veiling, a certain amount of, armoring of that pure and selfless divine love that you are. And many of us have found ways to armor up, you know. So, because most of us are like peeled snails, we're so sensitive, we're such empaths. We come with such a natural, open-hearted embracement and trust. I don't think very many of us know or really understand what it is to distrust. I don't even know what that feels like. I really don't. I don't know what it's like to not love. This is the nature of the Venusian, is that we have come to a point in our unfoldment where love is all that's real for us. And we don't have anything else going on in us. And that makes for a very, very painful awakening in an earth body, in the average dysfunctional earth home. In fact, I heard recently that many of our people are getting born in the Amish communities and amongst those rural, really simple people that live a really simple, holy and wholesome lifestyle for the reason that they need to have that protection. If you remember, Superman, interestingly enough, was adopted by a farm couple out in, a remote farming community. And I think the story, the very first story of Superman very closely models a lot of our starseed process. It's very close to my own recall. I think many of us related to those early Superman movies because it was like, you know, revisiting our own coming here. So let's do a little brief attunement. Take a deep breath. And we ask the Father, Mother, source of all love and light, Supreme Godhead, to calibrate each person living, listening tonight to the perfect degree of activation, decodement, and awakening that would be for their highest good, for their optimum next step, and in a way that they can easily absorb, digest, and integrate. We ask that those that are not prepared be protected so that they're not overly stimulated in a way that's not appropriate for them at this time of their unfoldment. We consign this evening to you, Father, Mother, God, with deepest love, deepest reverence. And as we flow in the light and sound currents of your holy name, we ask that you embrace us in your arms and teach us all things from your spirit that dwells within us. And we thank you in the name of Jesus, the most radiant one. So attune now to the energy that for you represents home. There will be many of you that listen to my show that are Venusian most recently. But I think just about every starseed has had to have some classes on Venus in order to prepare to come here. So it's a vibration that is representative of the high self of the Earth. It represents her alter ego or her higher self or her I am presence. And the Earth has a little child striving to emerge out of being the negative child, the call Nayar, as we call her on Venus. She's striving to get out of that negative child mode and grow into a, well, let's say at least a more obedient and more self-controlled and conscious elder teenager. She's moving now into the teens, as it were, as a planet. She's still a very young planet. But Venus represents the soul of the Earth. And so naturally, she's trying to merge and integrate and infuse herself with the consciousness of her soul, which would be Venus. And that's why many of us have come, as myself, from the soul plane of Venus. That's where I've come from most recently, which would be called the fifth kingdom, or the fifth dimension, or the kingdom of soul. And that's our stepping down point into the earth realm. Not necessarily the birthplace of our spirit, but our stepping down point for this particular embodiment. And let me take it to the beginning. Although in your decodement and activation, be aware that it's never a process of linear, sequential unfoldment when you're decoding. You won't necessarily have, you know, sequential steps because the linear time-born mind, as I've told you before, is birthed from what is called the separated mind, the separative sense of self, or the ego, as we call it, the lower mind. That's where time resides. And again, time is the word kal in Hindi and Sanskrit, which is the name of the god of the negative realms, who has jurisdiction over all the planets in polarity and duality. That's his particular jurisdiction. And he's a strict and really harsh taskmaster that makes sure that you work through your karma until every single little shred of it is finished and you're perfect. And even then, he doesn't want to let you out of his realms of duality. So again, that is why many of us have come self-realized and soul-conscious, so that we are operating out of that divine higher consciousness that is positive in orientation and is able to sidestep or quickly learn how to sidestep the major snares that keep you bound under the law rather than set free through through grace, which again I've told you, our beloved most radiant one, Lord Sananda, the Nujan, Lord of the Flame, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, is the one who came as Jesus of Nazareth to bridge us back from the realms of Kaal, or the God of the lower worlds, Satan, if you will, into the positive divine throne realms from whence we've come, our true home. So, again, I'm going to start now recounting some of my experiences in coming into this body. I am the third aspect of the Oversoul to come into this body. The first person that occupied this body was the commander in the Ashtar Command, and she was a Venusian Pleiadian mix. Her name was Denise, and she inhabited this body until about age 23, 24, somewhere in there, and then had a complete soul replacement. We call that a soul abstraction or walk out, and a soul integration aspect walk in, which would be the one called Saibani. And Saibani occupied the body up until about 1988-89, somewhere in there. And then gradually the consciousness of Ashtar and Athena began to utilize the instrument until there was a complete transposition as I walked in back in time from the future and integrated into this body as Commander Lady Athena. So that is who I am today, and that's been in operation since about 1991. When I came into the body, actually I came in at 11-11 in 91, but the process that I came in basically just to do a mission of a year and a half, that was it. And then I was asked if I could do some European tours, which I did, and that added another year and a half. And after that, I was free to leave, and I almost did. And then I decided I would stay, not only because I had formed friendships and really was enjoying myself by that time, but also because I felt that probably I could be of greater service in staying and working more consciously with our people from the earth plane, although I am basically free and I can leave any time I want, and probably will within another year or two or three. Probably I'm in that last cycle of my time that I'm going to want to be here. But again, I have a free choice. I can stay or go whenever I want, and many of you do too. It's not necessarily written when you have to leave for us. Many of us have free choice. We're liberated souls, which even Muktas, so we don't necessarily have to stay here any longer than we want. And many are choosing to, you know, to leave at this time, and that's fine. That's you. That's a good thing. So, you know, life is ongoing and eternal, and certainly the mission is. And it just depends on where you particularly want to work. I just really love Earth people. I love humanity. And I love the planet Earth. I just think it's so beautiful and so fun and interesting in its variety. That's something that we need to learn to appreciate, is so much variety here. Variety of consciousness and skin tonalities and races and cultures. My goodness, the cultures are beautiful. Each one of them is so beautiful. Why would we want to have a garden of all the same flowers when we can have a garden with all these multivariegated colors and tastes and flavors? And oh my goodness, it's a wonderful place to be. And when you're enlightened, it's a blissful place to be, because you're no longer experiencing the school of hard knocks. You're already living in the higher consciousness of the kingdom of heaven on earth. And again, that's moved into through being centered in your heart and living from your heart and having a heartfelt approach towards your life. It's not sentimental. It's not emotionally laden. A heart-centered life is very neutral. It's very detached. It's in that state of divine witness consciousness that I guess our friend Eckhart Tolle would call the presence, or the now. We're in the presence. And when you're in that state, you actually don't notice anything but the good news. You really don't. It's funny how you just, certain things don't show up on your levels when you've transcended those vibrations of consciousness. They just don't appear in your reality anymore. So if you want to get off the world, the fastest way I know is to love it and love every aspect of your life and be here now until you're not. And it's all really, truly perfect. So there are people living on Earth today, as I've mentioned before, quite a few from Venus that have actually stepped off ships. As I've told you before, I was present when three doctor scientists came and landed somewhere in upstate New York around Rochester. And I was present and watched them receive their papers that they would need to operate here. And later met a woman who had met them. They actually walked into her bookstore. There are quite a few people here from the Pleiades, people from Mars, Saturn, and Uranus. I met a man from Uranus, and he said that he had incarnated on Earth to learn love. And he said, when he met me, he said, "You're the first person I've ever met that travels in my universe." And I thought that was interesting. Of course, in those days, I had no reference point for what he was talking about, but he was really an interesting guy. He sure didn't have much love vibration going for him. And he had some rather bad attributes, too. He could, you know, send a negative thought and actually cause someone to die. I mean, he had some really bad stuff going on. So it was important that he learn how to monitor his power through love. So back to me. It's hard for me to stay on the topic of me because I'm so interested in other things. So I will try to track my own story for a little while at least. So my mother my parents tried for 10 years to conceive a child. And it was literally impossible because her womb was tipped backwards, and later they found that she had a tumor that had completely grown over the mouth of the cervix. So when she was found to be pregnant, the doctors couldn't believe it. And it was a big shock to them, a big shock to everyone. And, you know, they laid no hope whatsoever for her to be able to carry me anywhere close to full term. So what I did was I started appearing to my mother in visions and dreams, my mother being an Irish mystic. And, you know, that ability to have prophetic dreams runs in my family and my mother's side. So, actually my father's side too. But anyway, I appeared to her in sequentially growing up stages of my life so that she knew for a fact that she was going to have me and that I was going to grow through childhood and go on and, you know, flourish. So that gave her hope when every time she'd go to the doctor and the doctor said, "Well, don't hold your hope. You know, you're not going to be able to carry this child to full term, you know." And don't you love it how these people sometimes just speak so much deceit into you? But you know, a mother knows. And my mother, being a woman of great faith, she hung in there, and sure enough, I was born. I had to be born by cesarean, and it involved so many operations to restore my mother that and remove the tumors and everything, that she was an invalid for about 6 months after my birth. So my dad then ended up taking care of me. So my first memory is lying in my bassinet and looking up through the billowing gossamer curtains that had sunshine coming in through the window. I remember the warmth of the sun on my face. I'm looking up through what looked to me like rainbows. Of course, I probably was seeing those globes that people see all the time. I was probably seeing the angelic forms, but they looked to me like dancing rainbows. And I can remember how beautiful it was. And I remember my dad coming in at that point and looking into my bassinet and looking at me with such love and wonderment as a dad would with his first child. So, that was it. And it's interesting, maybe you folks have this experience too, but I don't have full recall of my life. I have little vignettes, you know, little settings in which things occurred, but I don't have a continuity of recall of this embodiment. I think it's because there's been so many aspects that have lived in my life, and as I've mentioned before, I've completed 7 incarnations in this body, which is very unusual. Instead of having to die and re-embody, I actually completed 6 lifetimes in this body, and I have now just recently completed a 7th. So that's reflective in a great diversity of experience that I've had in this lifetime, which is really rather amazing. So the first thing I can remember was that I was aware that I was God, and that I was real and everything else was unreal. That's the only way I can describe the feeling that I had as a very young child. Now I understand that that was a carryover from embodiments where I was a self-realized, God-realized yogi and guru. But I carried that consciousness through in this lifetime. I didn't have to wake up spiritually. I came in awake and aware. And I had very clear recall of having come from a place very different from Earth. And since I was born before the advent of television and anything of that nature, and I was an only child, we traveled constantly, I had no friends, there was no way I could possibly have any kind of an input that would have given me the recall of coming from a place where we materialized things through thought, we flew, we passed through solid objects. It was a place so beautiful and so full of love and light and exquisite beauty. I remember when I was a child that I used to get tummy aches every time we would drive through industrial areas. And in those days, there were no freeways in California. So when we would drive through the factory zone, I would always get really car sick. I really think the ugliness made me sick. I would finally realize that if I closed my eyes and went to sleep, that I wouldn't get car sick. So I learned whenever we were going through the uglies that I would close my eyes, go to sleep, and that way I wouldn't get car sick. But if some of you are also sickened by some of the sights and sounds and things you see on this planet, that could be a reason, because we come from places of tremendous beauty. Back to my birth. I was later told by Ashtar that they had to take my parents aboard ship and inseminate my mother from my father's sperm aboard ship, because it was true. It was impossible for her to give birth to me. But it turned out to be a good thing with a tumor over her cervix, because she also could not miscarry me. And that was a good thing. So sometimes we come in with some really interesting stories when we're allowed to see more and more. And back, you know, 10, 20 years ago, we couldn't talk about these things at all, because nobody understood about walk-ins or future self overlays. Who talked about stuff like that? I think I was the first person to actually talk about future self overlays. That's my own terminology. Maybe a better term would be future self integrations. That's maybe better. But it's more like an overlay in my experience, because I didn't lose the knowledge of my previous aspects. You know, sometimes people mention being a walk-in and they have a whole different, they lose themselves. I didn't lose any part of myself. I just overlaid and added to what I already had going, which initially was kind of confusing, because it was hard to sort myself out initially. But many of you are doing that too. You're also coming back in time from different phases of the future and integrating into your body. Now, the first thing I noticed was that people actually didn't say with their mouth what they were really thinking in their minds, and really feeling in their emotions and really wanting to have happen. We could call that lying or being a hypocrite, which means being a play actor. But I didn't think of it that way. I just noticed how strange it was that things didn't match up here. Like the inner and the outer did not match. The Native Americans mentioned that too, they being mostly from the Pleiades. They all, and also Saturn and Mercury before that. But they also mention that we need to be people of a single tongue, you know, not saying one thing, and single tongue, single heart, single mind, so that we, you know, we're not acting contrary to the truth that we are. So I noticed that. I also noticed that people were afraid to just love and be truthful and honest with what they needed, what they wanted, what they expected. People just didn't communicate when I came onto the planet. And I don't think we've really started getting real until this last maybe decade. And here I am in, you know, California, where we have probably the greatest freedom on the planet to be yourself and to be as far out as you need to be, nobody's going to really think twice about it. But you still go to some places on the planet, and there's, or even here in America, you go down certain places down south, you find a whole different consciousness. And many places are not open to any kind of anything beyond just the basic human levels of consciousness. So, you know, for me, it was kind of scary. It was like being in a world where everybody was play-acting and nothing was real. Like I said, nothing was real. So I certainly was not comfortable on the planet. Also, I was allergic to just about everything that you could possibly eat on the planet. And moreover, I don't think I came from a place on Venus where we actually ate food with our mouths. Or eliminated food through reproductive organs and elimination organs, because those functions were really foreign to me. I was scared to death. I was going to choke. I didn't like food. I didn't like to eat, particularly anything that's crunchy. I'm still that way. I don't like to eat crunchy things. I like just kind of like liquids and really soft, mushy food. And I was like that as a child. They practically, you know, had to nag and you know, berate me and tempt me and do everything to get me to eat. So eating was not a fun thing for me. And then I always felt sick to my stomach, or I had something going on in my physical body, and all kinds of sicknesses and childhood things that I went through that, you know, having raised a couple children now, and they were so healthy, they never had any of that stuff going on. So I was quite a different little kid. Also, I had complete recall of working out of body. And because I didn't have any knowledge when I came back in my body of what was I was actually doing, and was born during the Second World War period of time, so there were, like, terrible things going on the planet. And I was out of body working in concentration camps and working on battlefields and doing all this work. And then I come back in my body, and I'm in a little kid's body that can't process all of that data. And so I have really dreaded going to sleep. Or, you know, when they put me down for a nap, I do all sorts of things to keep from going to sleep. So many of your children that have a hard time sleeping or have nightmares, it's because they're processing these things that either are karmic situations they're working out as quickly as they can in their childhood, or they're doing out-of-body work, or a combination of both. And I think it really helps when you explain to a child that we do work for God when we go to sleep. We don't just lie there and nothing's happening. We, as a spirit, will go and do what we can to be of service. And helping the child to drink water, call in the light, and center themselves when they come into their body will really help them to break that connection from the astral plane into the physical. Little water, little juice, something like that. I would go in and just softly chant to my children, Om Sai Ram, Om Sai Ram. And they would awaken, and, you know, I'd explain to them what was going on. So anyway, those are some of the things I really remembered. as a child coming in. I had recall of being brought here in a spaceship, and I distinctly remember the ship leaving. And for a long time, I had this abandonment kind of thing that would come up for me whenever I'd see somebody I loved leave, whether it was on an airplane or a train or a car or whatever. I'd burst into tears. I just couldn't stop crying. And again and again, I relived that experience of being left here by my spiritual family. And actually, I really wasn't left here. I chose to come here. I later found out, after I lived most of my life, I finally found out that I'd never been left here. I had volunteered to come, and I came. So it wasn't a bad thing, but you see, again, because I was in a human body that didn't have all that wiring connected, sequentially, and in consciousness, I had a hard time with rejection and seeking for love, feeling tremendously lonesome. Oh, my heavens. So lonely. Talk about being a stranger in a strange land. That's how I felt. Oh, acutely so as I became a teenager. Finally lifted when I started having some romance, and I fell in love in my early teens. And that was really what helped me and got me through my teenage years, was having someone in my life that I knew really loved me, and having that love that I actually needed. Physically, physical love, not just, impersonal love. Because I actually did feel the love of God. There was never a time that I didn't feel the love of God. And, we're very tactile people. Venus, is not called the planet of love for nothing. We're very, our way of mating, for example, is not through intercourse like you do on Earth. It's merging every single cell of your body, which emits light, with the light emissions of your partner. You literally merge into one body of light. I'm Ashtar's wife, and many, many times on the ship, we will merge into one star being. It's like we're individual star beings, but we merge into one collective star being. Usually it takes that form of a star in my experience. Although I've also experienced where we'll be standing just several inches apart, and our light bodies completely merge into one field. And, we'd both have on our commander uniforms, and I'd wonder how can that be? How is that? And it's every bit as thrilling and wonderful and fulfilling as what you would call the sexual expression here on Earth, but it's totally of the spirit, and it's not localized into just, a few areas of the body. It's the entire bodies merge in ecstasy. And, if that isn't wonderful, I don't know what is. But it gave me a very different understanding of romance and sexuality and all of that, because I came from a level where when you want to create a child, you and your mate combine your rays of light and your intention in meditation. You go into meditative communion. And through that combined meditative process, you birth another being who doesn't come out as a tiny baby, but comes out the dimension I'm from as a young adult. A child may be 10, 12 years old, but, with an adult's consciousness. So in the future, I'm given to understand through Helen of Rurik that that's the way it's going to be on Earth. We won't have this period of frustration for souls taking incarnation in the lower density, the third density. They will be born as young, like they are on Venus. So, anyway, for me, the first time I met somebody that I thought, wow, that's the way it should be, was when I met Satya Sai Baba, and I saw the abilities that he He said, these are not yogic cities. These are simply my nature. It's my nature. Whenever I feel love towards you, my nature is to manifest whatever it is you desire. It's my nature. These are not any yogic powers. These are part of my divine nature. And so I felt very comfortable with him because it was like, wow, I come from a planet where everybody does that. That's what we do. And his love and his consistency between his inner and outer self was exactly what I was used to aboard ship and within the higher regions of Venus from whence I come most recently. There was that same consistency where between the word and the action. And I knew that was the secret of how he manifested things, because he had so wedded into oneness with his divine component that he could do divine manifestations here. Now, our bodies, depending on the density that we're manifesting from, they don't have, first of all, any fingerprints, because the fingerprints, according to Valiant Thor, a Venusian commander that's been living on Earth for some time, the fingerprints are the sign of the fall. You know, that's why, when you have a criminal, you always take their fingerprints. That's the sign of the fall. So we come from a planet that never went into the fall, never went into the rebellion. So we don't have those fingerprints. Interesting. Our heights range from 7 to 10 feet. There are some variations. Some are a little shorter and some are a little taller. But I would say the average is between 7 and 8 feet. Usually the women are 7, 7.5, men are 8, 8.5, and on up. And our hair colors range from white, white blonde through all of the shades of blonde to reddish and brunette. Our eyes are usually blue, green, or gray. We have broad hands. And all of the fingers seem to curl in towards the center one, which tends to be straight. And it gives the hands a very beautiful shape. The eyes have a slight slant to them, like almond-shaped eyes. Not quite oriental, but they kind of have an oriental look to them. Perhaps because our cheekbones are very high. We have delicate features and are always very pretty, attractive, handsome, beautiful. I have never, ever seen a homely Venusian or any other extraterrestrial, for that matter, from the divine throne realms. I mean, the lower densities don't have that beauty. But the more godlike a race is, the more beautiful it is. The beauty of God shines through their faces, the beauty of love. It's love that makes you so beautiful. The noses on the faces range from petite to aquiline. Ashtar has quite chiseled aquiline nose. The lips are full, and the teeth are usually even and very beautiful. We have characteristic very, very high foreheads with wisdom bumps. That's a little kind of bumps on the front of the forehead. And sometimes we have like a slight ridge along either side of the forehead. The ancient Greeks portrayed our Venusian bodies in their statues and artwork. So basically, we look like your perfect human body. Of course, down here, interestingly enough, it's very hard for us to hold that form here. Often we're quite sickly. Sometimes we come in crippled or handicapped because it's so very difficult to translate the particular DNA codings that we carry into the human instrument, densify it enough. So sometimes our people come in with a handicap in some form or another, or difficulty again, translating the mapping, the biophysical mapping of the higher bodies into the physical body. So that doesn't mean that we're necessarily perfect looking down here by any means. So we are all part of what's called the Brotherhood of United and Peaceful Worlds, which are all the worlds of the higher evolutions that have learned long, long eons ago how to live in love, peace, and harmony. And that's what we would like to help Earth move into. We really have that as our greatest desire, that Earth could be admitted into the Brotherhood of United and Peaceful Worlds, but she has to go through some major, major earth changes and major transformation of consciousness and weeding out. There's a lot of people that are not going to be able to pass in the physical body through the transfiguration process that's going to be required to move into these higher dimensions. But not to worry, you know, each soul will go to the place that's best for them, where it'll be the most comfortable, the closest to their level of unfoldment that would best serve in their next step. The language we speak is, of course, telepathic primarily through pictographic imagery. We're very visual. And so we'll send pictures telepathically. We pick up telepathic sendings very easily. But our language, when it's spoken, most closely resembles Sanskrit. And Sanskrit in Sanskrit is called Devanagari, which means the God language, or the language that's spoken in the cities of God is Devanagari. So that's what we speak. We speak God's language from God's cities. And some dialects resemble very closely the ancient Hebrew and Aramaic with some Greek overtones. It's interesting how the sacred languages really trace back to off-planet origin. This would also include the Tibetan and Egyptian scripts and ancient Chinese. These are sacred languages and sacred scripts that have come basically from other worlds. So our motherships are always 12 levels. They're created out of thought. And when they're created on a planet, on Venus, for example, we create them out of thought for specific purposes. And they densify then into the levels that we need to operate on. We can raise or lower the vibrations appropriately to serve the mission. Depending upon the mission and the density and the function, the name will be placed. In other words, the Star of Bethlehem is Ashtar, and Lord Sananda's and my ship, and the flagship for the Ashtar Galactic Command. However, if we function in a different capacity, we might be modulating into the ship that's called the Constellation. We have another one called the Liberty. We have many, many different ships, but primarily, in the mission that we're doing now with Lord Sananda, it is the Star of Bethlehem. I also have a ship called the Amethystine Star, or the Amethyst Star. I also have one called the Athena Star, which are actually manifestations of my own Merkaba. Ashtar likewise has Ashtar Star. You know, we have to realize that we're multidimensional and multifunctional. We'll talk about multitasking. We operate in more than one body at any given time. We operate in a variety of bodies and densities and overlays and dimensional time-space continuum placements in fulfilling our mission. So, you know, just because you're modulating in an Earth density frequency doesn't mean that you stop being these other things on these other levels. It's just that the brain consciousness function down here doesn't allow for that greater expansion of awareness, and where people open that up and it's not really integrated, it looks schizophrenic and wacky, and you know, people get put off by that here and intimidated by that here. So we try to keep it very, very consistent with you know, for here on Earth, we try to blend in and fit in and work with the consciousness paradigms that have been agreed upon. Now, what happened to me after I came into the body was a whole succession of rapid things that I went through. The first thing was, as I told in another show, the dark forces tried to burn down our home, and I cried and awakened my dad. And we were on the top floor of the glass brick building. And he, you know, threw me out the two-story window to my mother, whom he had lowered on a garage roof below, two stories below. And she caught me. And so there was a series of, you know, sometimes the dark power tries to take out bright souls that are very promising. I also was given up to die with lead poisoning, severe lead poisoning, from eating paint chips. In those days, they used lead painting on the windowsills. And I was breaking the paint bubbles and licking my fingers. And the doctor told my mother, he said, well, you know, your daughter will be dead by morning, so if you're a woman of prayer, I'd advise you to pray to God. And she did. And even though I, you know, had blood coming out of every orifice and I was, you know, very, very ill, I was supernaturally and divinely healed and didn't have brain damage. And that was a miracle. And no bad effects from it as far as I could tell. So that was God's good grace. I also had ptomaine poisoning 5 times. Very, very, very many things. I had pneumonia. I had 5 different kinds of measles. I had mumps. My kids never had any of this stuff. So it's amazing. And I had lots and lots and lots of, you know, inflammation. I had tonsillitis and sinus problems and boils. I had boils on my butt for one after another after another. And long bouts of fever. You know, sometimes a mystic will come in and they'll have fever with hallucinations, which comes from the suppression of the fiery consciousness. You know, when it's not allowed to have expression, it produces congestion in the lungs, bronchitis, pneumonia, fever. So I was basically like a tempest in a teapot. I came in with all this, you know, visionary, mystic consciousness in a, you know, in a very, very benighted world. A world that really wasn't able to reflect back to me any kind of reality that I could move into. Anyway, I was put in a Catholic convent, and that helped me because the people there at least were speaking something about God and higher consciousness, even though their primitive explanations really baffled me. But there were a few very illustrious souls there that I could relate to. And so that opened my heart, and I began to read all the stories of the Catholic saints and charismatic saints, and that really helped me because I could relate to them. I could relate to their stories, people like St. Teresa of Avila and St. Francis and St. John of the Cross and Teresa the Little Flower, the saint of the little ways that Mother Teresa of Calcutta was named after. You know, all of those I could relate to. It's like, oh, these are my home people. These are people, and they love God like, you know, we do on my planet. So that really helped me. And I think Catholicism was actually the only kind of teaching that I was exposed to that had anything of an understanding at all of other worlds and other beings and saints and things of that nature. I remember when we moved to California when I was 4 from down south, we lived with my aunt, and she and her husband were Baptist missionaries. But again, very, very loving, broad-minded people. And so I had some really godly people in my family that, thank heavens, I did have. My father was a very godly man. My mother was a real mystic. And so I did have very good spiritual vibrations. But in the relationship, there was constant fighting. And I remembered thinking, why in the world don't people just communicate? Why do they yell and fight when all they want really is to be loved? And yet they fight and fight and fight until they end up separating and hating each other, when all they needed to do is just say what they needed or what they wanted. I remember as a little child thinking about that. So when I was about, I would say, I must have been 6, 7, in between there. For the first time, the Ashtar command that I can remember came to me. And I didn't know who it was at first, but there were 3 tall beings, and they would walk through the walls of my bedroom and stand around my bed. And then I would get real sleepy, and the next thing I knew, I was with them in another place. Sometimes it looked like a park. Sometimes it looked like it was out in space and it's the stars. I had all different kinds of experiences. Sometimes they took me to the spiritual schools on this planet and other planets, and they taught me. And it was wonderful. Although initially I was very frightened, after a while, since I never was hurt or anything, it really wasn't a scary experience, I learned to look forward to it. And so I always had a sense of God's presence. You know, I interpreted that as being, you know, God and God's angels. And I always had this feeling like I had some divine hand. The hand of God was on my head, and I was being protected and guided. And I certainly was, because I really, really had an eventful life. So I went on to being a circus performer from the time I was 12 till I left to go to Denver University. And I was a bareback rider, an aerialist, and worked with all different kinds of animals, elephants and lions and tigers and bears, oh my, and wild dogs and pigs and vicuñas and llamas and camels and everything else. I worked with many, many different kinds of animals. I was trained in my aerial work by the Walenda family, the great high wire family, who was intermarried with the bareback riding act that I was with. First I was with the Poodle Sandiford bareback riding family, very famous family of riders from England. And then I went and joined the Alberto Valpé troupe, which was again, very, very famous in the world of bareback riding, and had their own circus in Venice, Italy. So that was my life growing up. I was a performer and traveled all over the world, and was even in Cuba during the revolution that broke out when Castro marched in and took over Havana in 1959. I was performing in the circus at that time. So had a lot of exciting things that happened to me as a youngster. And then I was screen tested twice. I was discovered by a talent scout at the age of 3 when my family was having dinner at the Waldorf Astoria, very snooty hotel in New York City. And I was working the crowd. You know, I was walking around and talking. I had a really, really long amazing vocabulary for a young child, because I was never around children, so I spoke like an adult. And there was a talent scout there from MGM, and so he came over to the table and asked if they could screen test me and make another Shirley Temple out of me, because I was a very, very cute child. And so I can remember my screen test, and then they kept tabs with my family until I was 7, because my family really didn't want to turn over their baby to, you know, Hollywood and the whole motion picture world and lose me. I mean, I was their only child. And so finally they gave up at the age of 7. But I was discovered again at the age of 18 when I was on a program called Queen for a Day. And because of my interesting circus background, I was chosen to be a contestant. And I almost won it. I didn't quite win it. But a Warner Brothers talent scout saw me on that television show and took me as her student. By this time, I was a drama student and a music student in Denver University. But she took me out of school and trained me with another partner. And then we auditioned for Warner Brothers. And they liked us a lot. And we're going to sign us up for a 7-year contract. And I decided, you know, with a deja vu experience, that I wasn't supposed to go into acting. So my partner, Glenn, he did sign the contract, but I didn't. I walked out. And that very day, I went and auditioned for a dance company and was hired for as one of 3 women and 4 men that made up this dance company, Larry Maldonado Dancers. So I was a professional dancer then for 5 years. So I had all these little mini lives. And then I married a minister. I had a daughter. And then I had incredible 3 hours, 45 minutes missing time. The walk-in occurred where Saivani came into the body. I was taken up in a ship. I came back just knowing everything about everything and what I was here to do and what I had to do. And then I was led to my first five-star command teacher, whom I studied with for 3 years until she passed away. And then I went on and lived with my Venusian husband, who was also a Venusian master. And we got involved with George Van Tassel and the work out at Giant Rock. And a whole new life, again, unfolded for me. So I was present during that early years when many, many people were being sexually taken aboard ship and taken to other planets. This isn't anything about channeling or anything like this. This is real one-on-one. Spending a month or two or three or whatever on another planet. And we were with George Van Tassel, working with him and the Integratron and all of that. And he was the very first person to ever be contacted by Commander Ashtar. And I was ordained as a minister in his meditation room under that huge rock, that giant rock, the largest freestanding boulder, I understand. I don't know if it's the world or the North American continent. It's probably the latter. But anyway, I was actually ordained in that little meditation room, which they've now sealed off, that Van Tassel used to talk to Ashtar in. So, and during that time when I was involved with Ashtar, my Venusian teacher had taken embodiment, and he was also going to these UFO conventions that George Van Tassel would have every year. I mean, talk about a small world. And my Venusian teacher, John Roger, who's a master teacher on Earth today, came to me when I was 12 years old on a night when I was really asking that whoever brought me to the planet, that they come and take me home because there was not enough love here and I just couldn't stand to be here any longer. And that night he appeared to me on the inner planes and began to teach me. And he did that for 20 years until 20 years later I walked into a seminar that was in a home in Chatsworth and recognized him. And I've been with him ever since. And great soul. And that was after I had been led to many, many things. I had been a student of the Arcane School and the Alice Bailey teachings. I was a teacher and a lecturer on that material. And I studied with Dr. Torkum Saradarian, who was a direct disciple of the Master Moria. And just many, many, many paths opened. I was involved very closely with Sai Baba and the foundation of the early Sai Baba. Really, the Sai Baba movement in America. Because when I came to Baba, there was, you know, nobody knew anything about him. And there was no printed material or anything. So I became one of the first, if not, I guess I was the second Bhajan leader, really, in America for Sai Baba. And Bhajans are devotional songs that you sing at congregational gatherings. So I was in on the ground floor of a lot of these things that were launched in, I think, a period of great awakening, which came out of the 60s and 70s and 80s. I was right in the middle of all of that. And, yeah, anyway, so I was busy teaching and doing all of that before I actually met my first physical teacher and before I went to see Sai Baba. I was involved with esotericism. And the teachings, the real teachings on Venus, the spiritual teachings on Venus I want to get into now because that's really, really where my heart lies. We have what's called the way of the eternal, which in Venusian is called Om Notia Zadia. It's also called Ek Omkar. It's also called Shariat Kisubmad, a way of the eternal. And it was first introduced on this planet after an absence of 3,000 years. Last time it was taught by a master from Venus called Gopal Das in Egypt. And, of course, by Pharaoh Akhenaten as well and Nefertiti, who were also part of that traveler lineage. But it had been not on the planet in an outer, visible, recognizable form since then. And in 1965, my friend Paul Twitchell introduced Ekankar, which is the teachings from Venus, into the Western world. Now, that is the only teaching that really comes from the living light and the living word of the highest positive realms of spirit beyond duality. In other words, it's the religion of the soul plane on up. And so those of us that come from the soul plane on down into the realms of duality, when we get down here and we see all of these different religions and none of them really speak about the living word, at least not until about the 60s, it was pretty amazing. You just really couldn't find any food for your soul, really, if you came from a higher level of consciousness. All of the religions on Earth, most of them, have now come under what's called the law, which is it's under the jurisdiction of the Lord of the Negative Realms that many people think they're worshiping as God, but it's really the call power. And the driving energy for most of the religions of the lower worlds comes from, at best, the top of the mental plane, which is the plane of universal mind, the force, and the law. But these religions are very constrictive and restrictive and directive and don't allow for individual freedom and point you back into reincarnation and karma, the constant recycling. So they're not paths of freedom, but paths of entrapment. And I think that's a good description for religion because the word originally comes from Latin, which means to bind. And we get bound up in religious doctrine, and it keeps us under the God of the negative realms who doesn't want you to, of course, go into freedom of soul. So with the coming in of our religion from Venus, we had for the first time the teaching of the living word. And the living word of God is the sound current. We're made of the light and sound of God. So that's how you find your way home, is through attunement to the inner light and the inner sound. And you ride those currents of energy into the higher realms beyond soul, into the heart of God. So, anywho, we are here on this planet on sort of a data-gathering field trip. And we're here because we're to become conscious, co-workers, and to master ourselves. We're to be co-workers of the Supreme Deity, which in our religion on Venus, we call it the Sugmod or the Sarmod or simply Hu. Now, I always chant Hu. Hu is actually reflective sound for that highest beyond name and beyond form manifestation of the Supreme Deity. That's beyond the beyond the beyond, but is the creator of all. So, because we're here to practice individual mastery, whenever we find ourselves in an experience or circumstance, we look to see what lesson it contains to move us towards our goal, whatever it is we've come to master or to learn or to examine. And that's why we have kind of an adventuresome attitude towards our lives. We don't take things too, as seriously as an average earthling does. And we realize that part of success, if you call it success, is the process of trial and error, which includes failure. But we don't think of it as failure so much as learning to discern what works and what doesn't work for us. So we have a really lighthearted approach to life that it's kind of characteristic of us. You know, when you're not from a place and you're just visiting and you're having a field trip, you don't get all bent out of shape with what's going on down there, because, you know, you're just here for a little while. You're just learning, you know, having a day out on the you know, adventure. And it really colors how you approach life. And those of you that are starseed, I hope you know exactly what I mean. Because if you do, it means you're beginning to wake up within the dream, which is the whole point of it. And that's a happy day when you do that, because then you start to really enjoy life and you start to live life for the first time. And you don't take things so seriously. Now this, you know, if you don't have the personal experience, you can't really learn things. We learn things best when we actually get in and have a hands-on experience. And when you do, then it can become distilled as wisdom and knowing within you. So that's why we are often given, like in my life, just lots of fast-moving experiences and relationships and things that kind of makes your head spin. You have so much going on. But you do that if you want to have as much experience as possible within a relatively short lifetime span that you have on Earth. Now, I think I've talked enough about our religion, but a religion on Venus is not a religion so much as it's a way of life. It's the light and sound and understanding of the living light and the living sound of God underlies everything, our science, our relationships, our understanding of the universe, our understanding of our place in the universe and our function. Everything is imbued with that particular lens of consciousness, which is open-ended and multidimensional and interplanetary. This is the religion of all the worlds that I'm familiar with, at least, in the United Brotherhood of Peaceful Worlds. I mean, we all subscribe to this particular approach to life. Jesus came to teach that through love. Pythagoras came to teach that teaching. These are all Venusians, through philosophy. Apollonius of Tyana came to teach it through mathematics and the science of sound. Yontne in Karakoram, which is now under the Gobi Desert, from Lemuria, he came to teach it through music and harmonics. Venusian and Nikola Tesla came to teach it through free energy. We all come to share it in some way, so that, you know, people can find a place to tuck in somewhere. And part of my mission on this planet is to synthesize all of the religious lineages and bring them into a harmonic chord so they can dovetail into the major chord of the light and sound of God, and we can all transition into the positive realms up out of the entrapment of the psychic and material planes and religions that keep you bound in time-space. So that's my work. But to do it, I have to immerse myself in each one of these religious traditions until I find the point where they all agree, and then I can splice it energetically into that one way, the radiant way of wisdom and the divine heart of God. So it's very much a path of the Holy Spirit and divine love. That's basically what the Holy Spirit is. It's the combination of the living light, the living word, and the living love in manifestation. Now, in terms of education, homeschooling is what we do on Venus. Wedded with entrance into specific buildings that are geometrically designed to house a specific subject, one subject. And you immerse yourself in the sacred geometry of the building, the sound tone frequency it emanates, and a specific body of understanding. We learn about history through time travel. We go into a large hall. We sit in the dark after calibrating the time, the date, and the specific latitude and longitude of where we want to go. We calibrate it in this recorder crystal, but place the crystal in the activator, and boom, we suddenly find ourselves in that place. It's just like the molecules of one time-space continuum dissolve into those of the next. So you don't travel. You simply rearrange the atoms to be in that new coordinate. And that's how we learn history. You find yourself on the planet or in that place in time-space where this event is occurring. And like the holodeck, you get to live it and experience it as much as you want. I mean, you can sit on the sidelines and watch it, too. But you can also jump into the fray and learn hands-on, which, again, is the best way to learn anything, is to get in and have some fun with it. So that's what you folks are doing here. You are learning past galactic history. Yeah, this is the past, folks, on planet Earth, coming back in time from the future and experiencing it and playing with it, because we want a different outcome. For example, we learned a long time ago on Venus, through mistakes, I mean, we got to an awful bad place before we finally ascended. We got into a place even, I think, worse than Earth it is today, if you can imagine it. We had wars. We had terrible atomic wars. We had created robots, which is a bad, bad thing. You know why? Because a robot then, which we had wedded with some biophysical atoms and material. So it's like a, not exactly like a Borg, but kind of sort of like that. You know, it's part machine and part amino acid protein thingies, whatever you call them. And what happened was that they became then possessed and entered by evil spirits from other lower dimensions, the astral plane. And at one point in some of the planetary systems, the robots, like HAL, you know, in 2001, Space Odyssey, had actually took over and dominated the planet and the civilization. So we learned robots are a bad thing. Don't go there. We learned that warfare is a bad thing. It doesn't work. Don't go there. We learned that technology devoid of love and devotion to God and respect and reverence for life is not a good thing. Don't go there. And so we learned through our mistakes, and now we've come back in time to help Earth learn, hopefully from the benefit of our experience, so they don't go through the same thing. You have to outlaw war on planet Earth. I'm speaking the truth here. You have to outlaw it. Every single nation, every single leader has to make a covenant that war is no longer an option, period. Because I tell you the truth, if that doesn't happen very soon, you're going to have the interruption by Almighty God in the form of nature really revolting against man's inhumanity to man. And what you're going to see is such earth changes that people aren't going to have time to think about war and killing and plotting how they're going to destroy and dominate someone else. That's not going to be even in their minds. They're going to be trying to survive. So that is really, really calling down a severe lesson, which I hope, you know, in my altruistic and idealistic little heart, I sure hope we can implement. Otherwise, it's not going to be pleasant on planet Earth. It's not pleasant now, and it's not going to get better anytime soon if we don't quit killing. You know, God didn't say, as a suggestion, you shouldn't kill. He said, you must not kill. You know, the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. So anyway. And then Jesus was even more strict. He said that even to be angry at a person, where you call him maraca, you fool, is the same as murder. So, and it's interesting because he said the same thing in the Course in Miracles. He said, even a little irritation, but thinly veils a murderous rage. So what he spoke about in his teachings in the Bible is a few things that have gotten through the ages in fairly intact form. He very clearly states in A Course in Miracles for today. And they're the same teachings. They're just brought up to our present-day understanding while maintaining the basic languaging and understanding that we've inherited from our Judeo-Christian past. So, anyway, it's time that we put away the things of childhood. And one of the most childish and stupid things that we can do, really speaking, is to try to use force and anger and hatred and murder to coerce and force another being to do our bidding. And there is no part of that that comes from God. That is purely that negative power that we call the call power or Satan or the devil. That's the force that causes that murderous hatred to rise in people's hearts to where they think nothing of killing another fellow temple of God, another incarnation of God's divine love and glory in human embodiment. So, again, what we do to the least of these, Jesus said, you've done to me. So, people on planet Earth, you must find some way of bringing conscious agreement worldwide that war is no longer an option, period. No longer an option. And that has to start in your heart and my heart. We have to stop being people of war in any area of our life where there's conflict and peacelessness. Above all else, we, the people of Venus, have come as emissaries of divine love and divine peace, that peace of God that bypasses human understanding. That's why we're here. That's our real mission. That's been our message for thousands of years, and that's our message today. Glory to God in the highest, and peace to all men of goodwill. That was our first message 2,000 years ago at the birth of Lord Sananda, Jesus of Nazareth, and that's our message today. I'm Commander Lady Athena, sending the united blessings and love from all the fleets within the Ashtar Galactic Command. Let's go out chanting, you. Deep breath. You. Probably have to continue this next week because I have a lot more I want to share with you. Anyway, be blessed. Have a wondrous and peaceful week ahead. And I love you with all my heart. Adonai.